Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 16th day of July 2018. I'm David Ellis and I will be with you up until 1 o'clock. Call us at 4341790 and you can also send us your emails and talk with us via WhatsApp. Let's take the first caller today. Hello. Good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your great self. I am going to be very brief. The interview yesterday has proven beyond doubt that the articulate, brilliant, and political genius, the Honourable Mayor Amor Motley QC MP, is more worthy to be addressed as the Right Honourable than the author of If More Enlightened and intelligent people fail to find civilized solutions to problems, we may as well shut down the schools, shut down the universities, and go back into the fields. The Prime Minister has begun to capitalize on her predecessor's utterances before ability to take the country forward. And the job done by our veteran journalist, Mr. David Ellis, without doubt, the Honourable Miss Mayor Amor Motley would bestow upon him the gold crown of merit come November the 30th, 2018. And she don't have to do what the former Minister of Finance told her to get attention.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, David.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, I can't comment about the press conference because they didn't hear it. But as Ms. Motley continues a lot of her present track, in my mind, so far, she'll be the most honest Prime Minister that we have ever had. And if she continues along that path, I think she's going to be there for a long, long time. I know there's going to be times when she's going to make decisions that she's not going to be popular with, but at the end of the day, as a leader, I'm going to make decisions where people don't like it, but if you're doing it for the national good. Now, two things I want to talk about. First thing, that woman that was evicted from the National Housing Corporation unit. I don't like that. Haven't read it, I just don't like it. Especially having a child with a very serious medical condition. Now, that's a double standard. You got some big boys and big girls that owe the government millions of dollars. But they're getting after them. And I'm not blaming Ms. Motley for this because that's an issue inherited. Nobody went after them. But here you have a woman who's struggling, who has been working on and off, and who's still trying to pay her bills, who still have to provide meals for her family, and gonna put her on the streets. I think that needs to be corrected as, like, no. I think that's what I think. The Transport Authority, Dennis asked me.
Before you go on to this transport thing that you love to talk about so much, did you see an article written in the Nation newspaper after that one, which spoke about, they quoted somebody is from the National Housing Corporation as saying that quite a number of people owed the National Housing considerable sums of money for years. Some of them have been working. Many of those people that they identified were people who were working, capable of paying, but refused to pay, which is not new. This is something that has happened with the National Housing Corporation from time to time over the years. And the real issue that we need to confront is, why should the government subsidize those people in that way if they have the capacity to pay? It is not the person who is under severe pressure for a period that you should go after. But do you see anything wrong with going after people who refuse to pay, people sometimes for 11 years or more?
I agree with what you're saying, right? And I see that anything that I have worded that can be sold should be seized, because I know of people who have satellite dishes.
No, sometimes what they have to be seized cannot amount in any way to the amount of money that they owe.
I understand what you're saying, but in this particular incident, this lady does not fall into that realm.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, stories like those require that you get both sides. However, if you go to National Housing and ask for the other side of that story, there is sometimes a reluctance on the part of an agency to give all the details because they don't want to put a person's information out there on the line. So I don't know to what extent in this particular case there is that other side that has to be told that has not been given. But I want to deal in general terms with the concern which has been raised about people who have been owing money for years. I see the National Housing talking about means testing and that sort of thing. But
not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea, but you know, the more important thing to do is to convince people to do the right thing.
But
because it is, you know, when you live in a national housing unit and refuse to pay for 11 years and that sort of thing and get involved in all types of little schemes that you can avoid paying, somebody else has to pay. You need the money to be able to maintain the units and that sort of thing. And governments sometimes turn a blind eye to it because they feel that if you chase people like that, you're going to be accused of penalizing the small black man. But the small black man has a responsibility to the other small black man.
Not only that, David, and there is how many votes are in the household.
Correct.
Right? Now, my last point on this is that they have people in this country that commit some of the most vicious murders, are walking the streets today. Right? Now, I'm not saying that, as you said, if you can afford to pay and you don't pay, that you should go spot free. I feel that kind of business law should be hammered. No, this transport authority, I don't beg, right? But if I was building a house and I tore down a termite infested house and they build a new house, I can try to get rid of the termite infested wood. I am begging the Prime Minister to take a serious look at the transport authority here and its functions. And it functions. A lot of things that's going on there, and is there for everybody, so she can't see everything. It needs to be dissolved. If I have my way, I would dissolve it, get the junior members of staff, I would fill them into other government agencies, and the big boys, bring something against them. This thing is very serious here. It is very, very serious.
You're not specific enough, so let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. You're very quick today. I like the way you're going fast. Mr. Ellis, yesterday on your program, and I was listening to the Prime Minister about this, you did mention the fact of people going home, and he spoke about it very lightly. But I was reading an article in Salas, and when somebody recommendations by the IMF was to cut costs on your expenditure. Now, here, Rosalind Smith, I think she's from the union, she said that she had a meeting with the Prime Minister, and there are no 6,000 people will be going home. I would like to ask Ms. Smith if she understands what is the meaning of the word cut costs on your expenditure. How do you go about cutting costs on your expenditure to the government? Mr. Ellis, you would not well know that when you look at the boards like CBC, the sanitation and the transport board, these are the first people are going to be affected by whatever layoffs that will be gathered. So I think Ms. Smith, she might be right. 6,000 might not be going home, but you might have 4,000 going home. The other thing, Mr. Apley had a meeting yesterday for his constituents, and he outlined details of the decision. I am one of the people who really did not support the Reverend Apley at first, but I tell this, Mr. Apley was part of the OEAFA administration, and he was also one of the members which used to go overseas on business or Barbados business. And for a politician of that magnitude, having won by, I think he got received something like 5,000 votes, something to that matter. Then you were elected to government, and to see young people come and get ministries, not even a ministry, no ministry was allocated to you. Also, I mean, the same thing could apply to Glenn Clark. But this is the thing. You know, people are humans, and humans have feelings. So therefore, to just sit down in the back bench and seeing that young people have been brought forward, it will hurt you. And I think Ms. Marlene have to adjust the way how she go about selecting her cabinet. I know she cannot have done it to Dale Marshall nor George Spinn. So, you see...
I don't understand what you are saying. You seem to be suggesting that because somebody has been in the cabinet before, it means that that person has an automatic right and an entitlement
to being
in cabinet again?
No, not really.
What are you saying then?
I'm saying that the gentleman, although he might... Let Cynthia Ford. Cynthia Ford was getting ministry, beside the ministry of looking after the elderly and empowering people. And that has a right to be there. That comes off the social welfare. So why not give our police sign, like looking after the buses or something like that? If she's going to get well and any. So, and I would draw another example to you. Mr. Dugan resigned from politics, came back. And people that were there all the time, and he come out and get Ministry of Transport.
But whose judgment? Let me ask you something. When you become Prime Minister, you know, you'll be in a position to make your own choices. Until then, you have to live with the choices made by the person who is the Prime Minister.
But you can't get into their head
as to exactly what are the factors that have influenced the decision is, to my mind, going a bit far. I mean,
No.
You can say what you would do if you were Prime Minister.
No, I remember saying, what I do? I do not like it, and it's my personal opinion. And I will tell the Prime Minister so to her face.
Okay,
thank you.
There was this shooting in Silver Hill Drive, Christchurch, this morning, where a 53-year-old man has been shot and taken to hospital. These shooting incidents remind us that we had a very serious problem last year. And one is hoping that you can hear a bit more from the police about how they are proceeding to deal with the problem. They did, after what happened last year at Kadumen, ramp up some responses, and there was a reduction in activity. But in the last couple of days, we have had some incidents that bring back to the fore the concern that we had last year. And I don't think that it is something that can be taken lightly. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well. And you?
I'm fine, trying to abide. I listened to your interview with the Prime Minister last night.
Yes.
And there was one burning question that I wish you would have put to her.
Which is?
And at the very end, she did mention that the pensioners got the increase, the check for the increased amounts last week, and she was very pleased with that. And I want to raise something with that, so bear with me for a minute. The non-contributory pensioners are now getting $225 per week, which amounts to $450 every 2 weeks. And I have an aunt who got her two checks for the $450 per fortnight, which works out to $900 per month. I'm glad for her, glad for all those persons who got the increase. But I have an uncle, now that aunt is non-contributory. I have an uncle who used to get $330-something per week, which per fortnight, which came to $600-something for him each month. And that aunt used to get $610 too when it was $155. And he has not got an increase. Now, he is contributory, right? And I had assumed that when the non-contributory persons got their 45.2% increase, that the persons who contributed would get some kind of increase, even if it wasn't 45%, because that's only fair to them.
Now they would maintain the differential between the two.
Yes.
You know, this matter was raised last week, and I called somebody in the government and asked them to provide us with information on it. I believe it's in the newspaper. because I will just have to look for the specific part of the paper where...
The NIS took out a paid... they took out a notice in the newspaper. I'm checking through today's to see if it's there.
I didn't see it either.
I've seen it on Saturday and Sunday. Let me just double-check the papers.
Okay.
Yeah, I will look for it in the meantime as well. Yes.
Right. Because that, to me, that's a serious problem. Because I do not see how someone who has not contributed anything to National Insurance, mind you not that she didn't work, she never worked for a company as such. She worked all her life. And she would call what you call self-employed, and we have a lot of those persons, and they didn't pay in anything. But this person who worked for a company and contributed, now they're at a serious disadvantage as compared to persons who did not contribute. And my uncle is brokenhearted, but I am sure he is not the only person, because I know of some other pensioners who I asked them, you got an increase, and they are getting contributory pension. They ain't getting no increase either. Now, the scenario from that is, if this continues, the next time we have elections and somebody back raised the 225 per week, you see how this could spiral off into a serious, serious problem. Not only that, we have a lot of self-employed persons. How are you going to encourage them now to contribute? I know some self-employed people who contribute to National Insurance. How are you going to encourage all those self-employed persons to contribute when they can look around and see that the persons who didn't contribute getting more?
Yeah, they need to maintain the differential.
Yes, so I want to know, when is that going to happen? How is it going to happen? Because it gets me scared. I have been working now for 40 years plus and have contributed for 40 years plus. So that's going to be my fate in the future, where I get less than somebody who has
who
not
didn't contribute
one penny. You're getting my money, because it's my money that I partly put into National Insurance. And that cannot be fair, cannot be just. And I hope that somebody take this program and let the Prime Minister hear that, because she's talked about a just society and fairness and goodness to the people, and that is an issue that needs to be addressed and addressed with some kind of haste, and then get the people back pay.
All right, thank you very much, ma'am. Yes, we found the notice which was put out by the National Insurance Department, and I found it. I have to look for it again. But I will give you the specifics in a short while, ma'am. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Ellis, veteran journalist.
How are you?
I'm remarkable, yourself.
I'm okay.
I'm glad to hear.
All right, this is the notice here. It says, please be advised that effective July 9th, 2018, there was an increase in the non-contributory pension from $155 to $225 weekly. This is as a result of the announcement in the Prime Minister's recent mini-budget. As a consequence, there was an increase in the minimum contributory pension from $190 to $235 weekly, also effective July 9th, 2018. So something must be wrong as it relates to this lady's situation here, where she says her uncle got nothing, got no increase at all. So she needs to check with the NIS on this matter. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, Ms. Ellis.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to listen to the press conference. My guess will be information will be fed into me as we transpired. I would want you to take up a lot of time and give me a synopsis of what really went down. But what I'm going to say here now, going forward, and I've been on to this for some time now, the Prime Minister has reasonably removed the NSRL, and I'm hot on the heels of saying, if that has been removed, the general consumer is anxious to see the serious reduction that should come about as a result. And I am calling relentlessly to have the persons put in place to make sure that this come about, if it is by the watchdog of the fair trading or whoever, and the kind of vigilance necessary, because if you're going to remove the NSRL and then hold on, here's the that you don't have the retailers brought into checks and balance, then you, it is to no avail. It's just like if you had left it, because it would not be the rippling effect that should come out.
But I don't think that it is that easy to for the government to bring retailers in line in this regard. This is about market forces.
I know
and
that.
To a large extent, it is for the public to exercise their judgment and to influence what will happen through supply and demand. Unfortunately, over the years, what we've seen is that when prices go up, they don't come back down.
It don't.
Usually. I mean, there are some areas where I think that Barbados sees a lot of competition. In some aspects of clothing and that sort of thing, I've seen, you know, you can get from cheap to expensive. And, you know, it seems to me that the competition in that particular sphere helps to keep prices down. But in other areas, when it where it relates to food, you have to be highly selective in where you're going. Sometimes you just can't be bothered to just drive here and drive there just to get 5 cents off of this and 10 cents off of the next.
But Mr. Ellis, I'm not talking about any 5 cents, and I'm saying this with some accuracy. Yeah, look, if you get an item, it's a set item, and you can get a markup of over $300 in various.
But no government that I know of has been successful in trying to bring those prices down. I mean, I've been around since the days when I used to hear them talking about price control back in the 1970s. And, you know, every administration has been asked to do this and do that. We've come to the point where you say publish the prices inside the newspaper and or online so that people can make choices, informed choices and that sort of thing. But for the government to go and say, well, listen, because NSRL has come down, you should now be selling corned beef at X or Y.
But
you can't, you really can't do that unless the corned beef is on a list of controlled items.
Items, I understand that. But let me say it to you quickly.
Zero rated.
Yeah, right. I understand that. But listen, I have heard persons commenting on this about how with the removal, Mr. Alessio, here in the community, you know, people are looking for a reduction. I understand what you're saying about the list of items. Don't get me wrong. I know about market forces. I know Mr. Johnson often.
Well, you know that people. In the past, I mean, I used to do it too. People joined forces and bought things in bulk.
In bulk.
So that they could benefit from the economies of scale, as they call it. I don't know how many people do that today. With the growth of the credit union movement, we know how to pool resources when it comes to finances. But have you ever stopped to think that maybe you could get together with a couple of friends and buy onions or potatoes or whatever at a lower price because you have been able to band yourself together and buy in bulk?
No, I'll answer you properly. Give me a chance. Look, I know a certain ethnic group that does that, but to tell you and I to do this
is impossible.
You're going to say you're a pot cooking at you and mine cooking at me. You know how we behave
as a
people.
Attitude.
Huh?
So our attitude
right.
helps to fuel the inflation that you're
right.
concerned about and the price gouging that you complain about as well.
You know how we are as a people. You're going to say, you're part cooking at you and mine cooking at me and this kind of privacy kind of thing. But the other group, they do it. I've seen it. They go one place and distribute and everybody go home merrily. But I don't know. What is the solution? I'll close on this. I close on this. When I was a boy in the 60s, it is true. Let me hear something to say that the items that the fines were things because they interfered with what we back then so called schedule. It is true, you don't touch those. And one or two persons say to me, let me tell you, you can talk to the coach, come home. The retailers and proprietors and things, they know those items. They're going to touch one. You'll never catch them touch one of those because they know if you touch one of those, there's a serious penalty. As you said, the thing of items exempt and that kind of thing. But seriously, what are we going to do, Wayne? I can highlight a $300 difference in an item, the said item, from place to place is $300 difference. And you're going to tell me conclusively that something isn't wrong?
Yeah.
I beg to differ.
Well, I'm not saying to you that something isn't wrong, you know. I understand the concern that you are raising, and that if an SRL was imposed and it's taken off, you would reasonably expect to see that there is some change in price. Now, I believe that people who are selling vehicles have indicated that the price has come down as a result of the removal of NSRL. But quite a number of other people seem to believe that it is a way of trying to say, well, once it has gone up, let's make the most of it. People have gotten accustomed to it, so be it, you know. And then the only way that you can deal with that is say, look, I mean, if I don't really need the item that badly and I realize that NSRL hasn't been taken off, I'll wait a while. A lot of people can't do that. They say, I need the item now, and therefore I can't eat the money. So let me go along and buy the item. It's up to you. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm well.
Yeah, all right. These are times where we have to make, as you said, suggestions of how we're going to solve these problems and such. Like, people around my community know that both Wesley and I actually from the same community. So whatever happens in there, if they see two of us together, they would ask us. Yeah, when they get on the program, they will bring issues to me that they want discussed. I say that to say this. I will give you more information as they come down, as they go on. Not now, but another time. At times like these, you remember Pete told you he would producing a 50-page document or something, sir?
I vaguely recall that he was doing some work, he said.
Did he ever produce it?
Not to me, but...
because we want to share... No, God, this is time that we want to share these things. Anyhow, let me touch on this pension. And I feel the Prime Minister is getting a lot of harsh comments about this pension pertaining to the non-contributors. And comprehension is a thing. You, as a Noah, got to call a veteran journalist, a person who was doing journalistic work for a long time. You must always try to answer the question that has been asked, or cause the person to stick to the statement that they said. The Prime Minister said openly, continuously, that she was going to increase the non-contributory pensions. You remember that?
Yeah.
She never made mention pertaining to the contributors.
But the NIS has indicated that the differential remains.
Yes, because naturally speaking, you got to, I feel in my national insurance should give you a cutoff point. Because what we are looking at is similar to when the former Prime Minister, Owen Arthur, introduced the reverse tax credit. He did not give everybody a reverse tax credit. And he gave you the reason why. He said that despite the fact that you are paying VAT on the commodities, you're not working for the monk of wages, and he gave you a reverse tax credit. And the reverse tax credit was lowered by the former administration. And we must ask a question, how come now that within 10 years, with an increase in non-contributory pension, people is questioning the non-contributory increase. But at the same time, they never question, or those who are calling, they're not questioning why with a high cost of living, the pensioners did not get an increase over the last 10 years. Nobody questioned that. I don't want to dwell very much on that. But, David, I want you to take some time out and let us look at the former health scheme under the what you would call the conservative, where we had, I hear the talking a lot about having polyclinics open across the island. It was a time when I grew up and every parish had what you would call a district hospital. Every parish, along with a doctor, you change it up. So every parish had at their disposal a district hospital where you could have gone there, sent there by the parish doctor for health. We must understand that the improvement in the health scheme pertaining to technology and so on, they had increased. But the availability of having somewhere to go was there. And we would deliberate on that on another thing. But I only want to say that pertaining to the pensions. And I'm hoping that Mr. P will bring that document. And a question I would like to ask you, David. You know you could go into a man's house by means of a telephone when some person call your home and inquiring, like, sir, if you had called me to ask me where Wesley lives, and then you call at my house, a female answer you, you think it is right for you to carry on your, I would say, demanding question, trying to formulate a relationship before even understanding that that person could have been a married person or not. You are what you would call that.
No worry about that. Coming right back.